Well, do you think, how do you, okay, slut ring, frang, slut
whatever,
ring.
She knew she had crossed the line with that stupid call.
She knew she crossed the line?
She knew.
People never know when they cross the line. That's
yes,
how they cross
do.
The line.
They're completely aware of it. They just don't care.
You know, that's one of my gripes is people who say on like TV and stuff, oh, what were they thinking?
What do you mean?
Well, it's like, you know, Bill Clinton, Lewinsky, people tutted on cable TV all the time. Oh, what were they thinking? Oh, what a terrible, dumb thing to do. What were they thinking? It's like...
They just didn't care.
Yeah, well, they, you know, they were in the heat of the moment and they did something that everybody's giving them a hard time about later. But it obviously seemed like the thing to do at the time.
That was amazing. Thanks for that, Andy. All right, mister. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Have a bye. Good one. FMU, you're
no,
on
I,
the air.
No, I regret saying that. So.
Hello. I just wanted to say that Andy's a big a dick, but I love him anyways.
That's nice. Is this Christopher Walken again?
Yes.
Sounds like Hitler to me.
You're my friend Tom Selleck.
Your impersonation has not gotten any better since last week.
You need to work on it.
I hate that guy.
I sort of hope that person's Asian so they can be included in Asians doing impressions of Christopher Walken.
That was awful. All right. Call us at 201-209-9368. You have 6 minutes to win. Tonight's topic is a-holes you hate to love.
Maybe Bill Murray or Johnny Carson will call
so,
us.
So far on our list, I crossed some out already.
You crossed some out? Okay. What are your fine lists as you see it?
Dave with Andy Warhol's silver paint. Robert from Seattle with Leona Helmsley. But so far, my favorite is Paul with Bob Fosse.
Bob Fosse is winning my
it's
heart
pretty
over.
Pretty good, right?
And you
I didn't even know who he was. But everything I've heard so far, I love.
And you never saw All That Jazz?
No.
Oh, you got to rent it.
That's different from Cabaret?
Yeah. Okay. Well, they're both movies by Bob Fosse. One is about himself. One, yeah. I believe, I think was he the director or the choreographer?
How the hell would I know?
I don't know. Well, for many years, he was like a Broadway choreographer.
Okay, I'm going to put it on my Netflix.
Yes.
Okay. FMU, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Hector.
Hi, Hector.
I just wanted to say that I think my boss is a big dick, but...
FMU, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going? Matt from West Caldwell. How you guys doing today?
Hey, what's
Hi.
Up?
Oh, not much. You know, you guys probably aren't going to like this because judging from the Michael Vick thing, but I'm going to have to say George Steinbrenner, Yankees late great owner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's just done so many bad things, getting rid of players, like not being like dead set on the guy, and then he goes somewhere else, and then he does well. It's just tough to deal with.
So what's the good part about George Steinbrenner?
You know, the Yankees would be so bad. He could have been with the Indians back in the day, so got to love him.
But didn't he just, like, you know, succeed by spending a lot of money?
Yeah, that's all he did. That's all he has is money. He doesn't really have... It's not like he really didn't know much about baseball, you know? He just had money. Lots of it.
Okay. I don't see spending money... Having lots of money as a virtue that makes up for the other stuff.
Yeah, I
for
guess you're right.
For the capriciousness. See, I persuaded him.
Oh, nice. All right, thanks for calling.
All right, have a good one.
You too.
Andy's dead. Up in heaven with Leona Helmsley. Heaven, Andy... I don't think so.
Are you okay?
Yeah, not really okay.
Call us at 201-209-9368. Tonight's topic is a-holes you hate to love.
Having a B-minus day.
Ugh.
201-209-9368. Or comment at WFMU.org.
FMU, you're on the air.
Yeah, you know what? I don't have a problem with Michael Vick.
Yeah? You mean the dog part?
Well... So what, he didn't like dogs, but that's just a small thing. Andy, come on, you never burned ants with a magnifying glass? Or,
I did not.
Or sprayed Raid at bugs? It's the same thing. I don't.
Well, okay,
I've
done that. The other day I killed a June bug with a knife.
It's disgusting.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, that's my own two cents worth. A real bad one is probably Frank Lloyd Wright, the architect.
Why, because he had an affair?
Oh, man, did he have affairs. Like, blatantly.
So
there
what?
There was one point where he bought this yellow convertible, and he rode around town
with his
mistress.
I read the book.
I didn't read the book.
Everybody to see. It was really bad.
Yeah, and then she got murdered.
Who? What? What are you talking about? Yellow convertible got murdered? What happened?
Frank Lloyd Wright had a long affair with some woman he designed a house for,
mm-hmm.
and then they moved in together, and somebody who worked at the house murdered her and her two children. And a bunch of, and two other people who worked there in the house.
Did Frank Lloyd Wright pay them to do it or something?
No, he wasn't there at the time.
Oh.
No.
There's suddenly nothing to do with him.
He's saying just because.
For like 3 years.
Just because he got, then they moved to Europe for a while. Just because he had so many affairs that he was like.
Oh, yeah, he was a creep. But man, could he design.
Yeah, leaky houses.
Good point.
All right, thanks for calling, mister.
All right, thanks.
Fun fact, I spent part of my vacation at a pseudo-Frank Lloyd Wright-designed hotel in Arizona.
That is so weird.
What?
What was it like? Do you have pictures? I want to see them.
Yeah. Well, it was designed by one of his students, but a lot of people think that Frank Lloyd Wright, like, sort of stepped in and, you know, told him what to do quite precisely. It's very Frank Lloyd Wright-ish, the Arizona Biltmore. Although I was
wow,
in kind of
fancy,
like...
you're fancy, Andy.
Yeah, it was one of the few times I got to stay in a nice hotel.
It's
we
nice,
stayed,
right?
Yeah, an outlying part that was, like, kind of far from the pool.
Cool.
But oh well.
FMU, you're on the air.
Hello?
Oh, wait. Oh, I thought it was the prank caller. Sorry.
Please call back.
How much time do we have? We have to end a little bit.
Yeah, oh, my gosh.
What time is it?
We have 30 seconds.
Oh. Paul, with the Bob Fosse call, you're my winner. So email me your address. And t-shirt size. My email address is shutupweirdo@wfmu.org.
Oh, where has the time gone? You're listening to Shut Up Weirdo here on WFMU. You can comment during the show at wfmu.org. Please visit our website at shutupweirdo.com, which has got the links to the Facebook, the Twitter, and the iTunes. I'm Andy.
I'm Frangry.
That's right, you're Frangry. Up next is Stuff You Should Know. Then at 8 o'clock, Mr. Fine Wine. You are listening to WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, live. And archived at live and archived at WFMU.org. So let's
end it here.
It's time for Josh and Chuck and Stuff You Should Know, the program that exposes the internal workings of life on this planet. This is the radio version of the Stuff You Should Know podcast, which is available from howstuffworks.com. Tonight, two science-oriented episodes, as Josh and Chuck discuss the phenomenon of sweating colors, and then in part two, they discuss whether science has been able to phase out the human need for sleep. Now here's Josh and Chuck.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. With me, as always, is Charles W. Chuck Bryant, flying by the seat of our pants. Right, Chuckers?
Speaking of flying, you're like, let's go. I got to go to New York.
Yeah.
It's your birthday tomorrow.
It is.
Happy birthday. This will be after the fact, of course.
I can't believe you're bringing this up.
So you got a little birthday trip planned. That's very nice.
You mean taking me to New York?
Nothing like a weekend in New York to celebrate anything.
I'm very excited about it.
Cool.
I'm giddy.
Well, you should be.
Yeah. And we were just in New York. But
where
it wasn't
staying?
Quite the same. Yumi didn't come with, did she?
No.
We are staying at a friend's place.
Oh, okay.
Fortunately, we have some friends in Brooklyn.
At Well, should you say his name?
At Adams?
Yeah, at Adams.
Yes,
house?
Okay. At Adams.
Cool. Tell Adam I said hello.
Yeah, I will. Adam and Serena's now.
Oh, well, good for them.
This is a lot of info. Might as well give out their address, social security number, that kind of thing.
Right.
Chuck, we should probably get started, right?
Yeah, let's do it.
You enjoy a good sweat, right?
That has been determined.
You know about sweating.
Actually, I hate a good. I hate a good sweat.
Do
it
you?
Plagues me.
I wouldn't call it plague. I think you have it under control.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm in the steam room, I love a good sweat, or the sauna.
Yes.
That's when you're supposed to sweat.
I like it, too. I don't like it. I don't like it either. I'm totally with you. Like, this summer's been particularly hot down here in Atlanta.
Awful.
I don't know if you noticed. And, like, I'm at this point, there's this boiling point, I guess, that I've been hovering around for like the last 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Where like if I think about it, I can make sweat just like burst out from under my pecs.
It's so awful.
And like all over my stomach, there's like a sweat trail, a horizontal one that I constantly have. I'm getting skin tags probably.
Right. And then if you get the nerves, you get both kinds of sweat, which we'll talk about.
Yeah. Because there's two different kinds of sweat glands. Do you want to just talk about sweating first and then go into this?
Yeah. How
okay.
about that?
Let's do that, Chuck. There's, you know, the average person has like 4 million sweat glands all over their body. You have like 8.
I buy that.
Right? And they're divided into two types.
Eccrine and porcine?
Close.
Eccrine and apocrine?
Yeah. Epocrine.
Epocrine?
Eccrine and apocrine.
Yeah, I think crine.
You say... You know,
yeah. Don't sing that.
So, they are both sweat glands, and you would think that you'd have, you know, like they'd all provide one function. They don't. You would be wrong.
That's right.
So, eccrine sweat glands, I think, are more predominant. I think there's more of them.
Yeah, because they cool you down.
Yes, that's what they're charged with. Is
they don't cool me down, or else actually, I don't know.
No,
maybe I'd be like really, really hot if
you
I didn't sweat
dead.
Like I did.
You would be dead. Your thermostat is set high, and it's your hypothalamus, by the way, that controls your body temperature, right?
Mm-hmm.
It gets messages, say, from like your skin,
right,
that things are hot, and your hypothalamus is like, oh, well, I better activate the eccrine sweat glands.
And humidity, I reckon, too, because that's what kills me.
Well, humidity kills you because it keeps you from sweating.
Not me, man.
No, it does. It kills you. It keeps you from cooling off, I should say.
Oh, it keeps the sweat from evaporating.
Sweat
does,
yeah, so so it like gets backed up.
Yeah, but it can be like 60 degrees and humid, and I'll sweat.
Yeah. The worst is when you get out of a shower and you start sweating immediately.
Oh, like you go to the gym and the shower didn't take.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Man.
I think that's a Seinfeld reference, too, actually.
Is it?
Yeah, George.
Okay.
He had a shower that didn't take.
Yeah, okay. That rings a bell.
Yeah, so, I'll take an ice-cold shower after the gym, and it's still just sweat.
Well, it takes a little while for your hypothalamus to be like, oh, okay, it's cooled down.
Yeah.
Right? So your hypothalamus, if it detects that your body temperature is getting too high and needs to cool down, it sends a message to your eccrine sweat glands that says, start sweating, boys. And it's a different type of sweat that you're sweating than the stuff that comes out of the apocrine glands, right?
Yeah, it's mostly salty salt water, basically.
Yeah.
Or water and salts. But mixed together, you have salt water.
And electrolytes.
Yeah.
If you've seen Idiocracy.
I have.
Have you?
Yeah.
You didn't like it, you said.
No, I thought it was good to a point, but the one joke premise movie kind of got stale for me.
I liked it.
But yeah, okay.
But we did manage to work a movie into a sweat
That's
podcast.
Right.
The other kind, Chuck, is apocrine.
Yes. And that is usually in the... is it usually in the face?
The face.
Axilla and breast, like just period, or with this condition?
That's where it's most heavily concentrated.
Period.
Yes.
Okay, and the axilla is under the armpit.
Yes, that is your armpit. Your axilla.
Yes, not under the armpit.
No.
There's nothing under the armpit.
No, it's just dead space there.
That's right.
Remember when we talked about deodorant versus antiperspirant?
Yes.
Classic SYSK episode?
Boy, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, it was. Well, we talked about sweat then, too, and apocrine sweat glands produce the kind of sweat that makes you stink, right?
Right.
So if it's just salt and water coming out of your eccrine sweat glands, that's not going to smell.
Sweaty palms, they're not going to stink.
Right. No, they don't.
You know, there's hyperhidrosis, period, but then some people get it so bad in their hands, you know, they have surgery.
Yeah, well, that's as far as we've ever progressed with the treatment of sweating, of any kind of sweat problems.
Just like destroying the sweat gland?
Removing them, getting rid of them altogether. Or, yeah, going in with like a laser, like pew-pew.
Yeah, I don't get the palms. It's just, it's my head and face, which is... an awesome place to sweat.
Well, your palms are very hairy. I imagine if they weren't, they would.
Oh boy,
they would be far sweatier. Okay, so with the apocrine sweat glands, you're sweating out water. That's the vehicle that's actually moving the stuff like fats, the waste byproducts of metabolism. Just basically, it's a way to evacuate stuff from your cells. Outside of, it's a disposal system.
Yeah, it sounds gross, though, when you say fats and wastes.
Right, well.
Coming through your skin.
Yes, and those don't stink in and of themselves. It's the bacteria on your skin, the local flora.
Mm-hmm.
No, the local fauna. that eats those fats and then creates the stink as excrement. And so you stink because of bacteria excrement. That's what that is.
Yeah.
So you've got both of these, and both of them are capable of a condition, a very, very strange condition, called chrome hydrosis.
I'd never heard of this, and I thought I knew everything about sweating. And the reason I didn't know anything about it is because it is really, really, really rare.
Yes.
Like, well, this is the alien hand syndrome of bodily fluids, I would say.
Yeah, of sweating, at least.
Of sweating.
There's a lot of weird bodily fluids going on.
Syndromes.
Yeah.
This is when, drum roll, although you know the title, is when your sweat is colored.
Yeah.
And I thought I had it bad. But
no,
at least I'm not
imagine?
Sweating green.
That's really what it is. This condition, chrome hydrosis, is painless. It doesn't lead to any other conditions.
It's benign.
It's totally benign.
Yeah.
It's strictly embarrassing. It's debilitating, I imagine. You can't wear certain clothes. You certainly can't wear white because all of a sudden, like, you have two large orange circles where your nipples are.
Yeah, because that's one place where especially... the apocrine version takes place is very typically under the armpit and at the breast.
Right, and one of the reasons why you can remember that apocrine sweat glands are around your nipples because they are eventually converted into cells that deliver milk when you're lactating.
Right.
Well, not you, but you know.
I told you I had a friend that lactated a guy.
That's right, you did. So apocrine can turn into lactating cells.
Right.
That's why they're around the nipple, right?
Yes. And apocrine, if you have this form of chrome hydrosis, you will sweat yellow, green, blue, black, or brown.
Yes. And why?
Specifically. Because the culprit here is something called lipofuscin.
I don't know if it's lipofuscin or lipofuscin. It's like lipid, like fat.
Yeah.
It's a type of fat that's been oxidized.
Yeah, and it produces
it
a pigment.
Color. Yeah.
And there you have it. I mean, it's pretty simple, actually.
Yeah, mystery solved.
Mm-hmm.
So if you come to your physician and say, hey, man, why are my nipples orange, producing orange sweat, or blue, or green, or yellow?
Yeah.
He's going to say, I have a pretty strong idea that it's apocrine chrome hydrosis.
I would say right away. I saw the orange lady. Did you see her? I saw a PowerPoint someone had
the nurse?
Was she a nurse? Was
no,
she the
I
orange?
Guess she wouldn't. No, orange. So this is such a rare condition. I don't know if we've said that whoever you're talking about, it was probably the first case ever documented, and that was like 2008.
Maybe, because it was a PowerPoint that some, I guess, physician had done, and it showed, her face was blacked out, but it showed pictures of like her stained brassiere and t-shirts, and it was just like, I can't imagine that. I feel awful enough as a sweater.
Right. You're a sweater plus color.
Yeah, exactly.
Which just fascinates people. You can't fault somebody when they're like, what's going on?
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
But I'm sure that happens a lot. Like, all you do is explain away, like, oh, I have this weird condition where I sweat orange.
Well, apparently with this nurse that I mentioned, I think she was like 26 or something like that. She spent 5 months wondering what the heck was going on before she went and sought treatment. She had no idea. And I can't imagine sweating something.
Yeah, go right away.
And waiting like 5 months before finally going to a doctor.
Yeah.
For red sweat.
Yeah.
Like, I'm one of those guys who will like put off going to the doctor forever.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But red sweat would get me in there.
Yeah. Have you seen the Gatorade commercial?
Yeah.
Where people sweat colors?
Yeah.
I'm sure that's not what they were. They weren't like, they should have had a tag at the end. To not
like not chrome hydrosis.
Yeah, exactly. To not offend like the five people in the world that have this.
So, Chuck, we were saying, like, if you come in and your doctor sees that you have, like, blue sweat coming out of your nipples, they're going to think it's apocrine chrome hydrosis. You can prove definitively that it is by holding a black light up to the sweat because the lipofuscins phosphoresce.
And what's that called? A Woods lamp? I'd never heard that.
Mm-hmm.
I just called it a black light.
Yeah, because, you have a basement.
Yeah, and I went to Spencer Gifts when I was 13.
Right, exactly. Do you have any Woods lamps?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's apocrine chrome hydrosis. Acrine chrome hydrosis is also equally well explained. It's always a foreign object, like a dye or something that a person's ingested that somehow gets into the acrine sweat glands and then is produced.
Right.
Because the one common thread between these two is that the pigment is produced in the sweat gland.
Yeah, that's important because if you're a miner, a copper miner, sometimes you'll get a mineral mix with the sweat once it leaves the skin, and it'll turn it blue.
Blue for copper, yeah.
Right.
But which is not to be confused with the blue man who took too much, some kind of copper, colloidal silver.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what it was.
Wasn't he a senator or something or a congressman?
Was he really?
One of the guys turned silver.
This guy was blue. He looked like a blue Santa Claus.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, man.
Yeah, from too much colloidal silver. So, yes, if you have pseudochromhidrosis, it means that you're sweating a normal color or colorless sweat, but it's reacting with something on your skin to produce.
Yeah, and they say get out of the copper mine and it'll stop eventually.
Right. Stop rubbing, you know, pigment on yourself.
Right.
But with eccrine chromhidrosis, you're producing pigmented sweat and then sweating pigmented sweat, but it's not from lipofuscins. It's from something else. And that nurse that I was talking about that waited 5 years... Mm-hmm. And I think this was in the mid-90s, or the late-90s. She sweat red, and her physicians took some samples of, you know, her regular sweat and, you know, compared it to the substance they found on her clothes and said, yeah, you've got chromhidrosis, and we think it's eccrine. And
well, it would have to be because it wasn't yellow, green, blue, black, or brown, right? Well,
yeah, but we know so little about this that if somebody presented with a case of red apocrine chromhidrosis, they'd be like, oh, okay, well, this is new.
Right, right.
You know? Because they don't understand the mechanism behind either of them. They understand what's going on.
Yeah.
Or they understand how it's happening, but they don't understand what's going on. They have no idea.
Yeah, and I think this, like, alien hand is one of those where they might be able to find out, but it's so rare, it's not like a lot of funding goes into this for research.
Right.
So they just treat it.
You know, speaking of alien hand, I found out about this thing. I wrote a blog on it recently about mirror dystonia. And it was like mirror neurons and alien hand mixed together, right? So, like, if you have this, your brain isn't producing proteins, this one specific protein that basically acts as like the switch. Like, when you go to pick, I'm going to pick this up with my right hand.
All right.
Right? So, both sides of your brain get the signal, but there's this protein that switches as, like, oh, okay, right hand.
Right.
So this protein isn't strong enough in people with mirror dystonia, so they go like this.
Really? Pick up something with both hands?
Both hands, yes. Or both, like if they go to take a step with their right foot, they do it with their left foot too. So walking's very difficult
That's
too.
That's a jump.
Yeah.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
We'll have to do a full podcast on that maybe.
There is not enough on it.
All right. Well, that was it then. The mini cast.
Yeah. So eccrine chromhidrosis, that nurse I was talking about, she was eating some sort of, and I could never find out what
Oh, I wonder
snack
why you didn't
was.
List it.
I couldn't.
I thought it was for like, oh boy, I can't say it was right. Like a Keebler devil's food cake.
It had it was tomato based and had paprika, and it was a prepared food that she ate as a snack constantly. So the red tomato paste and the paprika were coloring her sweat. And that's where science is baffled. They have no idea how something
gets into the sweat
can
gland.
Get into your sweat glands.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. They also don't know why some people overproduce lipofuscins or their fats become overly oxidized until they become lipofuscins.
Well, eccrine is the one that you want because the treatment for that is to identify the culprit of the foreign food, or not foreign, but this whatever, the food that's discoloring your sweat and discontinuing that food.
Yeah. It's okay, like, sorry, lady, that, you like the paprika stuff? The lady could have been like, you know, hey, to heck with it. I'm going to keep eating this. It's like
Forget
the best
this.
Thing I've ever eaten.
Fudge yeah. that.
Right. So, Chuck, if you're stuck with apocrine chromhidrosis, right? Or you love your tomato paste, paprika flavored prepared food product, right? That's my novelty throwing disc. Remember that on The Simpsons?
Yeah. they couldn't call it a frisbee.
Right, yeah. And I don't think we can either.
Sure we can.
If you like it so much that you want to seek treatment, what are some of your treatment options?
There's this substance called capsaicin, which is the key ingredient to pepper spray, and it's and bear spray, and it is from red pepper. It's a just derived from red pepper itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like red pepper flakes?
Pretty much.
And it will burn you, I guess, if you spray it in your face, but apparently as a cream, it can help treat the apricot version.
Right. And we should have said earlier, eccrine sweat glands are triggered by changes in body temperature sensed by the hypothalamus.
Right.
Apocrine sweat glands are triggered by emotion.
Well, that's why I talked about the nerves.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's this neurotransmitter called substance P that apparently is involved with the activation of your apocrine sweat glands, right?
Mm-hmm.
So with capsaicin, for some reason, it blocks the reuptake of substance P,
yeah.
which makes you sweat less.
Yeah, see, mine work in concert, and I think most people that sweat more than usual work in concert because, like, you get hot, and you're like, oh, crap.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you're headed to, I mean, if you're not doing anything important, it doesn't matter, but if you're going somewhere and you're like, oh, man, now I'm sweating,
yeah.
and then the other ones kick in, yep. it's even worse.
Yeah, that used to happen to me in college. Like, I couldn't sit toward the front of the class because I was
really?
Just too self-conscious, and I'd start to, my scalp would start to tingle a little bit, and I'd be like, is that sweat or are there bugs jumping off my head? And it just hit this vicious cycle.
Are you sure that was going on?
I'm pretty sure.
College, bugs jumping off your head,
yeah.
tingling? Okay.
It could have all been some sort of dream.
I also, it's funny you said tingling because I don't know if this is true, but I did see one account that said it's sometimes associated with an aura, like a warmth or prickling sensation.
What?
This condition.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
And that it happens more often in African Americans, and that the youngest age they found it in was an 11-year-old. So.
In apocrine or eccrine?
Both.
Huh.
Just the whole condition period, I think.
I wonder if, like, these additional things, like, you can sense them leaving your skin.
Maybe.
More than
know.
Just sweat or the standard sweat.
And I don't know if associated means it was, like, one of the cases or if everyone across the board said it was kind of hazy.
Yeah. And then we also talked about removing sweat glands is one treatment option for hyperhidrosis and chromhidrosis.
Yeah, and botulinum.
Yeah, Botox. Or,
what does
to
that
be
do?
Fair, Myoblock as well.
Right.
It's a toxin, right? And it affects the neurotransmitters that are involved in sweating as well.
Oh, the other one too, which is a terrible treatment, is to express the glands.
Yeah.
Because it lasts a couple of days and, like, basically sweat it out. But then you got to do that every couple of days.
Or you could just go to the sauna a lot.
Yeah, I imagine that would help.
And wear drink maybe like a sign around your neck that says, yes, I know I'm sweating blue.
Right. I'm with stupid. Have you ever had to express your dog's anal glands?
No, I haven't. Someone roughly told me, I don't remember who, years ago. And I was like, I'm not doing that. They're like, well, then you have to take your dog to a groomer. I was like, no, I don't.
Yeah, Jerry, ever? No. Have you ever smelled it? Anyone?
Yes.
It is the most distinct, awful smell on the planet.
There's nothing worse.
And it's exactly like when you smell it, you're like, okay, that's anal gland.
Yeah. Well, that's why they rub their bottoms.
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
expressing their own anal glands.
I know. My dogs, they self-express. But you smell it when it happens, and then you see them cleaning themselves, and you're just like, all right, remember, no licks for like a week.
Right.
On me.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sorry, I got sidetracked.
So, yeah. I guess that's it, right?
You got anything else?
Dude, there's so much. I don't on this one. But there's so much sweating stuff. I personally can tell you quite a bit about sweating, sweat glands, zits, all that stuff. I spent like a couple of months just writing about this stuff for a while. And this article came out of it.
I wonder if I never got zits because I sweat so much. I wonder if that helps keep my pores clean or something.
I don't know.
It also has to do with oil on the skin. And I think you're, like, my family, none of us really got it. So I think it's hereditary to a certain degree too, right?
Yeah, and I think it also has to do with the degree of how sensitive your skin is.
Right.
Well, anyway, if you want to learn about that kind of stuff and sweating and read my article on chromhidrosis, type sweat into the search bar at howstuffworks.com, and it'll bring up a ton of stuff.
We should do one on acne.
Okay.
That's a big one.
Yeah. I'll bet some of our pubescent listeners would appreciate that one,
heck
huh?
yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I said, am I right? So that means it's time for listener mail.
Yeah. This is someone who's correcting us, and I'm just not quite sure how right she is.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to discuss it. Hey, guys. I'm a fairly new fan of your show, but I really enjoy every episode. I'm dying to go back and listen to the older ones, but there are so many that it's taking some time.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. I just listened to the recent one about America's First Murderer. It was great. At the beginning, though, I think you may have confused or lumped together Puritans and Pilgrims. Pilgrims that came to Plymouth Rock in 1620 were actually separatists.
Right.
Because they wanted to completely break away from the Church of England, whereas the large group that settled in Massachusetts, like 10 years later, was Puritan. They wanted to purify, reform the Church of England, not break away. The Puritans and Separatists had some different philosophies and beliefs, so I think it's important to make that distinction. I am a history nerd, so I think those details are cool. Please let me know if I misheard or if I don't have my facts straight. Thank you, Rachel.
I'm a history nerd, too.
Yes.
And I don't know the answer to that one.
I looked it up, and I got a little confused, to be honest, because it was a little bit like that rectangle or square thing. Like, I think some of the Separatists, or some of the Puritans were Separatists, but not necessarily the other way around or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or Pilgrim. I don't know. I got confused.
Oh, so you're saying some of the Pilgrims were Separatists, but not all Separatists were Pilgrims? One of those kind of things?
I think so, but I
mean, I could see it. That explains why there is the word Separatists and the word Puritans.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it describes the same group. I think I would argue, though, that it matters so little at this point that... Okay, lump them together.
She's saying that... I think she's saying that there were no Puritan Pilgrims.
Okay. And well, we'll find out.
We'll either find out, someone will set us straight that really knows it, or we will just say, Rachel, thank you for the correction.
Yeah.
Either way.
I'm going to go look.
Okay.
I can't let this rest.
Let me know.
Even if it doesn't matter any longer, I still need to know.
And it's not like I didn't care. I did look, but we're busy, you know. I didn't have quite enough time to fully research it.
That was the Stuff You Should Know episode entitled Can You Sweat Colors? Originally podcast at HowStuffWorks.com on August 2nd, 2011. This is the radio version of the Stuff You Should Know podcast. Now for part two. Josh and Chuck examine whether science is phasing out sleep.
The National Weather Service has issued a hurricane watch for the following counties and areas: Passaic, Hudson, Bergen, Essex, Union, Putnam, New Jersey, Putnam, New York, New York, Bronx, Richmond, Kings, Suffolk, Queens. The National Weather Service has issued a tropical storm watch for the following counties and areas: Passaic, Orange, and Morris.
This episode was originally podcast on October 12th, 2010.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant, and that makes this Stuff You Should Know, the Criterion Collection.
What are you doing tonight, buddy?
What am I doing tonight?
Mm-hmm.
What am I doing tonight?
I know what you're doing.
What?
I know what we're doing.
Oh, yeah, tonight.
Tonight.
So not like tonight in our physical...
No.
Temporality.
I mean tonight in the future.
Yes, like as of like someone listening to this, it would be their tonight.
I would say possibly on October 12th.
I am going to be at the Drunken Uni.
That's right. The Drunken Unicorn on East Ponce de Leon Avenue in Atlanta.
Yeah.
At the MJQ Concourse.
Yes.
Sort of hard to find if you don't know what you're looking for.
Well, this is what you do. You go along Ponce until you see the Murder Kroger.
On your left or right, depending
on which way. Where you're coming from. Chipotle, opposite the Murder Kroger, on the other side of Ponce.
Yeah.
And behind that is MJQ.
Yes.
Beside that is Friends on Ponce, the bar.
Yes.
You ever been?
No.
I'll take you there.
Okay.
It's going to blow your socks off.
Really?
Yeah. And then below Friends is MJQ.
Yes.
It's a very little nondescript door, gray steel door, I think, some steps down. And I don't think there's any signage whatsoever, Chuck.
No.
We may have to stand outside and be like, here,
exactly.
It is, everybody.
Why are we there, Josh?
We're going to be there because our house band, the Henry Clay People, are going to be playing there.
That's right.
And this is kind of the unofficial kickoff for our big trivia event night, which is tomorrow.
Tomorrow night.
Which is October 13th.
Yes, and that is at the Five Seasons Brewery West Side on Marietta Street, and it is going to be fun.
I'm getting excited, Chuck.
I'm getting pretty excited.
It's going to be pretty cool.
We have actor and author and former literary agent John Hodgman.
Yeah.
And we have former Dukes of Hazzard co-star Joe Randazzo.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Squidbillies co-creator.
And Aqua Teen Hunger Force co-creator.
Dave Willis.
Yeah.
I've been really getting into Squidbillies.
Yeah.
It's awesomely wrong
one
in
of
so
my
many
friends,
ways.
I don't know if he still has it or not, an original Squidbillies oil painting on wood. And I haven't talked to him in a while, so I don't know if Dave Willis actually painted it. But, I mean, it is dead on. So I need to ask him, do you also paint?
I was watching last night, and Earl, the dad, Squid, had a, he always has on different baseball caps to say different redneck things.
Right, yeah.
And one of them said, beware, in big letters, and then in small little letters it said, good stuff.
Good stuff.
So this is your chance to come out and meet John and Joe and Dave and us and Jerry, and there'll be other podcasters there. I imagine the ones that don't hate us will be there.
So Strickland.
Strickland will be there.
Yeah. Strickland will be there.
Hopefully some other people.
Yeah.
So we invite everyone to come out. 6 o'clock doors. Trivia starts at 7. The Henry Clay People Show is one of those later shows, but we encourage you to come. And
that's on Tuesday.
Yes.
Trivia's on Wednesday. Five Season Brewery,
yes.
West Side.
Experience some rock and or roll, and then some fun trivia.
And Chuck, also you can look up our event on Facebook, and there's all sorts of details and directions and stuff on
sure.
that.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, check it out. The Stuff You Should Know trivia event page. Yeah.
And this is
Facebook.
The last you will hear of this.
That's it. And then what? We may be going on a national tour.
Yeah.
We're almost definitely going to Austin.
It's so funny, like everyone else is so sick of hearing this, but I guarantee you we will get people on that Thursday on Facebook that say, well, I never heard anything about your trivia event.
And we'll just be like, go buy a tack hammer at your local Ace Hardware.
Right.
Take it home.
Yes.
Put the receipt in the garbage can and smack yourself in the forehead with it.
Don't return it after.
Right.
All right. On with the show.
On with the show, Chuck. That's it for Plugfest 2010.
Yes, for now.
Yeah. So, Chuck, I've got a story for you.
All right. Story time.
Okay. So, remember when we were talking about roller derbies?
Yeah.
And there was that whole transcontinental roller derby where it was really just a roller rink that people went around 57,000 times for 11 hours a day?
Yeah, until they passed out.
So, I know that you know that there's all sorts of a-thons or what they used to be called. People like to just do stuff to the extreme.
Test their endurance.
Right. Dance-a-thons.
Yeah.
Hunt Nazis-a-thons.
Yeah.
Just anything you could think of in like the 40s, 50s, the 30s. Well, staying awake was not immune to the a-thon fever.
I bet.
There's a guy in 1959. He's 32 years old at the time. His name is Peter Tripp, and he's a disc jockey in New York City.
New York City.
Yeah. And he made a little studio in a storefront and said, I'm going to stay awake for as long as I can. And he did.
And DJ while he's doing it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
He did for 201 straight hours.
Wow.
Yeah. He did, this is kind of a mark against him as far as stay awake a-thoners or a-thon enthusiasts go, but he was given amphetamines by two physicians to keep him up.
Physicians.
But the guy, yeah, well, back in those days.
Joey on the corner.
Yeah.
His physician.
So I was going to say back in those days, you know, like doctors prescribed anything, and I thought, oh, yeah, nothing's changed.
Right.
But he stayed awake for 201 hours, assisted by amphetamines, but still, right?
Quite an accomplishment.
It was, and it stood for a while as I think the longest anyone ever stayed awake, and then people started topping it. And then finally, in 1964, there was a teenager in San Diego, which is a town I know you love, and his name was Randy Gardner, and he's actually still around. That kid stayed up with nothing, no assistance whatsoever.
Yeah.
For 264 hours.
On purpose to try and set the record?
Yeah, for a science fair.
Wow.
It was a science experiment, and the guy ended up setting the world record for a while.
I bet he hallucinated like crazy.
Now yes. Here's the thing. I think Randy had a bit of a hard time. He had something kind of some sort of psychotic break here or there.
I'm sure.
Peter Tripp particularly had a hard time, especially because of the amphetamines.
Yeah.
He hallucinated cats chasing mice in the little studio.
Right.
He thought one of the desk drawers that he was seated at where it was on fire. A man showed up in a dark suit, and he confused him for an undertaker and ran out.
That's probably because it was an undertaker.
Probably. So, yeah, there's all sorts of horrible stuff associated with sleep deprivation.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Bear with me.
I'm with you.
We're about to get to the want moment, okay?
Okay.
In 2007, you may remember, there was a guy named Mr. Wright. I can't remember Mr. Wright's first name. Can you? Tony. He was from Cornwall, England.
Oh, yeah.
He stayed up for 11 days
That's
in
right.
a pub in Cornwall.
Yeah.
Playing pool, just hanging out.
We did that on the webcast, right?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
He broke the record, and I'm making air quotes here.
Right.
He broke Randy Gardner's record. What he didn't know is that a year after Randy Gardner set the record, a guy in Finland beat Randy Gardner's record. So, two problems here. Tony Wright didn't actually beat the world's record. And the second part is, in 1990, Guinness stopped acknowledging the world records for staying awake the longest because of health reasons.
Really?
So, Tony Wright stayed awake for 11 days for absolutely nothing.
Well, he got a lot of coverage, and he was a national hero in Wales, from what I understand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I would have looked into that beforehand. I would have called Guinness, the Guinness people.
Yeah. One of his friends is quoted as saying, like, we've never heard of this guy in Finland. His name was Tomoi Soinoi. No. Toimi. That's I've got it. His name is Toimi Soini of Finland.
I've never heard of him either.
Yeah.
And that's a name you wouldn't forget.
No, but thank you for bearing with me through that horribly long introduction.
That was good.
My point was this. We have this weird obsession with staying awake sometimes, right?
Well,
some people do.
Yeah.
It's like an endurance contest.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy in New York, Peter Tripp, was assisted by amphetamines. These days, there's entirely new classes of drugs that are designed to keep us awake, right?
Yes, they're called drugs I don't want anywhere near me.
So, Chuck, you're big on sleeping, right?
Well, yeah, but I don't sleep like Emily sleeps. She can sleep.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still, you know, you get a little older, you start waking up early no matter what. So even if I have a late night at like 2 a.m., I'm still up at 7.
Yes. Okay. But you still require sleep.
Yes.
I, for one, am alarmed at the concept of synthetically phasing sleep out.
Oh, me too.
Even if we don't need it, even if we figure out how to get rest without sleep, it just seems wrong.
Well, it is. And, you know, we'll talk a bit more about that because I have pretty strong feelings about messing with, you know, your natural human biology.
Mm-hmm. Now, we do already, Chuck, through things like caffeine, speed, we stay awake. I know you're huge on speed.
Greenies. Not true.
No, absolutely not true. I kid. But what do these things do to you? There's problems. There's side effects, right? They
keep
you
sure.
up, but there's a problem.
Yeah, caffeine. Although there are studies now that say that caffeine can be good for you in certain amounts, but caffeine can make you crash. It can give you diarrhea. It can make you really irritable if you don't get your caffeine in your system.
I know, that's right.
And the same with amphetamines. You have a serious crash after an amphetamine high.
Yes.
And that's not what you're looking for.
No, that's called sleep debt.
Yeah, and you got to pay it back with amphetamines.
Right.
Like,
so,
sleep for a half a day if you've been up on greenies.
Yes. I think, when did, greenies?
That was big in Major League Baseball. They called them greenies.
Is that, okay.
A bunch of baseball players used to take
them.
I'm
used to them being called bennies.
Oh, bennies.
I read a lot of Kerouac when I was in high school.
Yeah, bennies.
Yeah.
That's short for,
Benzedrine.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, that's the bad effects of caffeine and
sleep
amphetamines
debt,
for sure.
Jitteriness, diarrhea.
Yeah.
Plus, the problem is you're being kept awake. You're awake, but you're not. There's no rest whatsoever.
Yeah, your body's not getting used to it or anything.
No, and your mental faculties begin to decline
sure.
pretty rapidly once it starts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Chuck, what's somebody who wants to stay up but doesn't feel like getting addicted to speed going to do? What can you do?
Well, Josh, you should try modafinil.
What's modafinil?
It is a sort of new drug. What is it, about 12 years old in total?
98, 99.
Yeah.
No, some French researchers were giving it to cats in the early 90s, but it's really kind of taken off for human use beginning in 99, I think.
Right. It's in a class of drugs called eugeroics.
Yeah, which is Greek for, quote, good arousal.
Good
classic
arousal?
Greek, yeah.
So the idea here is that you can stay awake with modafinil, and it goes, like all drugs, it goes by like a dozen different names,
mm-hmm.
and you don't have a sleep debt. That's pretty amazing.
It is. What's more, it's and this article was written by Julia Layton on March 7th, 2007.
Mm-hmm. It's changed a lot since then.
It has, quite a bit. It's at the time, at 2007, modafinil was like this promise of the future. And not only...
No side effects.
No side effects. Yeah. No addictiveness.
Yeah.
All of this stuff has been proven untrue over time. It's actually... I read one study that found that modafinil... For use in shift workers, late shift workers,
right?
It kept them awake 1.7 minutes longer than a placebo.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it may not even work,
huh?
But let's take the 2007 view of modafinil first, okay?
Okay.
So it's non-addictive. How could that possibly be?
Well, it can't. But
no, this is the 2007.
Oh, sorry, we're back in time.
This is naive.
Well, are we explaining how it works?
Uh huh.
Specifically, it doesn't do what caffeine and amphetamines do, things like blocking neuroreceptors that trigger drowsiness. One's called adenosine,
uh-huh.
And they block the receptors that bind to it, caffeine does, and so it will keep you awake, basically, because you're not feeling tired.
Right. So, like, your neurotransmitters, all of our neurotransmitters function by a release, and then they float around and have their effect, and then they're taken back up, reuptake.
Yeah, well, and dopamine plays a big part, too, in both of these.
Right. But with the neurotransmitter, including dopamine, you can activate its release and or prevent its reuptake. So you're either flooding the brain with it and or keeping it in the brain longer, right?
Well, and that's what amphetamines do specifically, is they give the dopamine nowhere to go.
Right.
So you're just...
euphoric.
Yeah. Sounds pretty good to me.
It does sound good, but the problem is your brain's like, oh, you want to play that game, huh? Well, I'm just going to withhold dopamine unnaturally, so you're going to be depressed for 3 or 4 days.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that's how you get addicted to something, though. Anytime dopamine is released artificially in the brain...
Your body loves it.
Right, and that's... Here's the problem. Your dopamine is the centerpiece of the brain's reward system.
Right.
It's how we learn to eat and have sex to reproduce or have sex for whatever reason.
Right.
And anything that gives us a sense of pleasure, dopamine's involved, and we're taught, we're motivated to repeat that behavior through the release of dopamine. So if we drink caffeine or take speed or do cocaine or whatever, and dopamine's released, we're taught to do it again, which is the basis of addiction, which, by the way, I think we should do a podcast on.
Just addiction?
Yeah, it's a really interesting
concept. You wrote some about that, didn't you, a while back?
I wrote how addiction works.
Well, let's do it.
Okay, Chuck.
Let's do it right now.
All right, you ready?
I'm not prepared. So that's how those other, well, in 2007, more nefarious drugs would help keep you awake. And
modafinil didn't do that. For some reason,
It
activated dopamine, but just maybe not as much.
Right. And they believe that modafinil actually targets a neurotransmitter, GABA. We'll just call it GABA.
GABA.
Yo, GABA, GABA. And that is the sleep regulator of the brain, and it seemed to slow down GABA's release. So basically, your brain didn't know that, hey, it's time to go to sleep now.
Right, like your circadian rhythm's thrown off, right?
Yeah, so it specifically targeted that, and, well, not that alone, because it did release a little bit of dopamine, right?
It did, but what they were saying was, like, it's just such a little amount that not becoming addicted. Like, it does, but you're not becoming addicted. Don't worry about it.
Right.
GABA's not the only, and there's also, from what I found, there's four types of GABA. And apparently, like, GABA 4 is like the most sensitive one, and that's like the real.
Is that the one
that's the crux of research right now? Is trying to figure out GABA or GABA 4. But in addition to GABA, there's also histamines, which make us drowsy.
Which why antihistamines can jack you up.
Mm-hmm. And there's also glutamate, and glutamate is basically the brain's natural speed.
Right.
Right. So they think that. I think they figured it out by now, but 2007 thought was that the modafinil prevented the reuptake of glutamate, which keeps you alert and functioning, right?
Yeah, and the end result of all this is what they found was a miracle drug, is what they called it, because there was no sleep debt. When you came off of this drug, you didn't need to sleep for a half a day to catch up on things. You would just go back and fall into your regular pattern and be all rested.
Yeah.
It sounds great.
Yeah, it does sound great. I mean, staying up for 48 hours and then just being able to get an average 8-hour night's sleep.
Yeah.
And you're fine. I mean, why sure. why wouldn't you want to do that? Me personally, well, we'll get to that later.
Well, we should say, too, though, that it was developed to treat narcolepsy specifically.
Right. And we should probably talk about this. There's a company called Cephalon, and Cephalon took modafinil and marketed the heck out of it.
Yes.
As Provigil. And Provigil, according to a 2002 New York Times article we read, said that it means provides vigilance.
Promotes vigilance is
promotes
what it was short
vigilance,
for.
Right?
Yeah.
And basically, it was adopted for off-label use
mm-hmm.
by everyone from college students to the CEO of Cephalon.
Yeah, what's Frank Baldino. Frank Baldino. He took it, and he didn't say why he was taking it.
No, but the only thing it's approved for
is
right,
narcolepsy.
Is narcolepsy, is the treatment of narcolepsy. They've tried to get it approved for jet lag. They tried to get it approved for shift workers syndrome.
Oh, yeah.
They tried to get it approved for general drowsiness, tiredness, and they couldn't. The FDA was like, no, we'll let you sell this for narcolepsy to treat narcoleptics.
Sure.
The problem is...
That's not how it worked out, though, right?
Well, the problem is there's only about 200,000 narcoleptics in the United States.
Right.
So Cephalon's like, we need to get this out there. And they started marketing it off-label. It kind of nefariously as well.
Yeah, it became a lifestyle drug is what they classified it as.
Yeah, a nootropic. N-O-O-T-R-O-P-I-C, which means it's another name for smart drug. Like transhumanists
right.
love nootropics.
Do they?
Yes.
All those pharma names are so, like, I don't know. They rub me the wrong way.
Yeah. So, like I said, nefarious. I'm basing this nefariousness on this really great article, Chuck. There's two parts called The Rise and Fall of Provigil.
Yeah.
And it's by investigative journalist Evelyn Pringle. And I think everybody should read this. It's really interesting.
This is hot off the, like, yesterday it was released, I think.
Yeah, it was.
Hot off the presses.
How odd is that?
I know that you picked this.
Yeah. Because I had no idea that this was written yesterday, and we picked it like 2 days before.
Crazy.
A week before. Anyway, in the article, she talks about how Cephalon had physicians that they were underwriting that didn't reveal their relationship to the company,
right.
but were saying, like, this is a great drug, and
yeah.
it should be used for all these off-market purposes, stuff that if the company had done it, they would have been prosecuted federally. There was the Attorney General of Pennsylvania oversaw a bunch of lawsuits, and the company hired him as executive legal counsel.
Really?
Yeah, just all sorts of stuff like that. There's allegations of pay-to-delay
right.
programs with their competitors.
They found that 80% of the prescriptions written had nothing to do with narcolepsy.
Yeah.
It was depression, MS, sleepiness, and like you said, the shift workers syndrome. They were prescribing it for all kinds of things, basically to make you feel better.
They had their reps actually visiting psychiatrists. Dentists were prescribing this stuff.
Really?
Yeah. And again, 200,000 narcoleptics, 25% of them were on the drug within a year of its release, right?
Yeah.
And it just wasn't enough.
Well, and then that's when they started jacking up the price, when they found out that people really love this stuff. From November to March, it rose 28% in price. And it was 74% more expensive than it was 4 years previous in 2004. And I think it topped out at like $18 a pill?
Yeah.
That is insane.
Yep.
And the long and short of all this, as of this week, the European Medicines Agency basically came out and said, you know what? You can't use this for anything but narcolepsy because we have found out that there are certain psychiatric disorders this causes, like suicidal thoughts and depression and psychotic episodes and potentially life-threatening skin reactions.
And also, first, I'm sorry, you're right. It topped out at $13.62 a pill when it was originally $5.53 a pill.
That's
and
nuts.
For no reason whatsoever, it just rose in cost in the U.S.
Well, make money.
And you were talking about the psychiatric disorders that it exacerbated.
Oh, yeah.
They basically reformulated modafinil into a kid's version for the treatment of ADHD, and they found that what would be the equivalent in the actual population of 1 in about 200 20 in 100 cases of things like psychotic breaks, suicidal thoughts in children.
Right.
And this drug, it was called Sparlon, was taken out of FDA testing. They just dropped it.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, and not only that, but it's supposedly non-addictive. Not so. In 2009, a psychiatrist and addiction specialist said to USA Today that he had seen his third case of Provigil addiction, and two doctors who back-to-back admitted that they were addicted to it, and they were also alcoholics.
Right.
It's kind of interesting.
I guess, so the hammer kind of fell down on Modafinil and Cefalon kind of simultaneously.
Well, it's currently falling, it sounds like.
Yeah, the FTC has a lawsuit. There's, I think, three different employees turned whistleblower on the company and filed lawsuits against it. And then, yeah, that psychiatrist came out in USA Today and said that he was treating people for addiction to it, which is huge. And then Bloomberg also the same day, Bloomberg News released a report about its addictiveness. But it's really interesting to read the stuff that's going on now compared to our 2007 article.
I know.
That I think probably should be taken down and rewritten pretty soon.
Yeah, because it's basically claims it's a wonder drug like Viagra.
Yeah, it actually compares it to Viagra and says it's better because you don't get 5-hour erections.
Right.
Right.
Or worse, depending on your viewpoint. So, Josh, that is just one drug that we have picked out. But that is not the whole story of science phasing out sleep.
Yeah, and this whole podcast isn't intended to target Cefalon. It was just really interesting that we ran across this during our research.
Yeah.
And again, I think you should read The Rise and Fall of Provigil by Evelyn Pringle. Just look it up online. I think it's up there for free, right?
Yeah, it's a good one.
So Modafinil is not the only thing, like you said, targeting sleep.
No. There's another drug from Cortex, a pharmaceutical company called CX-717, and it works sort of like the other one in that it keeps you awake by triggering glutamate activity. And
glutamate was the brain
energy.
Speed.
Yeah. Specifically triggers that, and it also targets histamine. So it sort of works in the same way, but science is all over. What they're trying to do is they're trying to research and see if they can get people by on less sleep with the same effects as having a full night of sleep. That seems to be the goal. Get 3 hours of sleep, but your body feels like it got 8 hours.
And not only 8 hours, the best 8 hours.
Yeah, the best 8 hours.
And it's safe. It can't be addictive, which means it can't have any effect on your reward system, so no dopamine could be released.
Right.
Right? And that what you were talking about, CX-17?
717.
CX-717, it's an ampicine. That's the class of drug. And like you said, it targets the reuptake of glutamate. Has nothing to do with the reward system as far as we know right now.
Right.
And that's the one that DARPA's looking into.
Mm-hmm.
DARPA's leading the way. They're driving this sleep deprivation research because, you know, it's military.
Yes.
And apparently the special ops guys have to stay up for 72 straight hours usually with very, very little, if any, rest.
Sure.
And be sharp enough to, you know, assassinate somebody.
Right.
So,
well, the military did a lot of testing on Modafinil.
Yes, and this is I can't remember what article it was, but somebody talked to a DARPA researcher who said we found it was about as good as caffeine.
Oh, really?
Which is weird. Like, I don't understand, because the article that Layton wrote is saying like it has a huge following.
Right.
People swear by this stuff. It clearly did.
Mm-hmm.
And probably still does. So I don't understand how clinical results could show it's no better than caffeine, while other people are like, this is the greatest thing ever.
Well, it could be the placebo going on again.
I guess it could be.
With the military, though, they would give it to these pilots for a couple of days, make them stay awake, and then have them go out and fly their fighter jet and just to see what happened.
Yeah.
And they found that it did a good job till about the 48-hour point, and then after that, regardless of what you're on, your body is going to start showing effects of sluggishness and maybe hallucinations and the things that you don't want if you're a fighter pilot.
No, or just a regular guy trying to make a living in this world.
Exactly.
There was a 2009 study. Modafinil actually did contribute to our understanding of the human brain. Some researchers at UC Davis slapped people into a Wonder Machine, loaded them up on Modafinil, kept them awake, and watched their brain. And they saw heightened activity in the locus ceruleus.
I can't imagine being in a Wonder Machine for 2 days straight.
I think they probably sleep deprived him, and then probably toward the end of the second day or something, they put him. I don't know.
Who knows?
But they also gave him tests and found that, some tests have found that people actually do better on psychological tests, tests of skill, mm-hmm. feats of strength, you know, Festivus stuff.
Yeah.
On Monophidil than they do, you know, just awake or on caffeine or amphetamines or something like that. So there's mixed results. But we didn't know what part of the brain was keeping people awake or was subject to sleep deprivation, and now we do. It's the locus coeruleus. So that's probably going to play a role in this endless quest to do away with sleep, right?
Part of it, yeah.
It's not just drugs either. They're looking for a sleep gene.
That one's really interesting to me. Don't you think?
Take it away.
Because drugs are drugs, but they believe that there are people that can get by on less sleep. That they're called short sleepers. About 1 in 1,000 people can function just fine on a few hours of sleep. They don't need the big 8 or 9 hours.
Right.
And they believe it's hereditary, and they're trying to find this gene so they can tweak it and make us all into short sleepers so we'd all get more stuff done.
Yeah, and there's actually a species of fruit fly that is a short sleeper fruit fly, and it has a mutation. And what they found is a mutation has to do with potassium channels. No one knows exactly what yet, but that's interesting because there's an autoimmune deficiency or an autoimmune disease called Morvan syndrome, and people with Morvan syndrome have trouble sleeping, and there's their syndrome has it affects the transport of potassium through cell membranes.
So there's a tie there for sure.
Definitely.
So it has something to do with bananas? Is that where this is all headed?
I guess.
Wow.
Fruit flies, potassium.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So if they find this gene, I think what they're looking for is a future where people can program their lifestyle how they want it. If you want to work 80 hours a week and work till 4 a.m. and get up at 7, maybe there's a pill that can help you do that with no side effects.
Maybe.
I don't buy it.
What I find alarming is that sleep, like sleep being synthetically reduced or eliminated, natural sleep.
Yeah.
It even among sleep researchers who are like, this is a horrible, horrible idea,
mm-hmm.
they still say it's inevitable. And apparently the predictions are like 10 to 20 years off where we either have a pill that we can take and sleep for 3 hours but feel like we slept for 8
right.
and keep going, or we won't have to sleep at all. The problem is, remember John Maynard Keynes,
yeah,
the economist,
mm-hmm.
and he came up with the leisure society.
Yeah,
in the 1930s, he was like, people in 100 years won't even have to work, and
right.
we'll all just sit around and have fun. He was right about us being wealthy and having more leisure time, but what he missed the mark on was that we don't spend our leisure time on leisure.
No, we'd spend it trying to acquire more wealth.
Yeah, so why? Why would you possibly want to have a 22-hour day of wakefulness? The
I
whole
wouldn't.
Point of our 8-hour workday is to divide the day into three parts. 8 hours working,
mm-hmm.
8 hours of leisure time,
yeah.
which we now spend vacuuming and going to the grocery store,
right.
and 8 hours for sleep.
Yeah,
I find it really discouraging to think that we're going in that direction to where we're carving at the 8 hours. We've already done away with the 8 hours of leisure time, and now we're going
sure.
after sleep.
Some people would love
mistake.
This, though. I think it's a huge mistake, but there are some people out there that would love to be able to only get 3 hours of sleep a night and all the stuff that they could get done. I don't know, man. I mean, what is there to do from 2 a.m. to 5 a.m.?
Oh, there'll be... first of all, you got Taco Bell, right? So you can go to Taco Bell. That's one thing.
Sure.
There's all sorts of stuff you can do, but imagine
well,
if
internet,
everybody
can,
else
yeah.
is up.
Well, that's true, and I guess if they build a 24-hour society
mm-hmm.
like New York City,
yeah.
those freaks in that town,
yeah,
there would be more things. There would be libraries open. Businesses would be open.
Everything would be open for 24 hours. Everything would go to shift work. The
no
key
thanks.
Here is if we're going to do that, don't ever, ever agree to a salaried position. Always, always make it hourly.
Yeah.
Or else you're just in big trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I say no thank you.
I do too, Chuckers.
Great.
Also, if the pills don't work, if they don't find the sleep gene, they've got this one thing. it's called brain polarization. Remember transcranial magnetic stimulation?
How could I forget?
Okay, so this is called the poor man's version of that, where rather than using electromagnetism, it uses a DC current to jolt your brain awake.
Oh, that's that machine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So look for that. Look for a future where you have a cattle prod in your brain so you can work longer.
And you think, oh, I'm really sleepy. I'm falling asleep and it feels so good.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel great and I can get some more spreadsheets done.
Yes. If there's going to be any future for humanity, we have to rail against this, everybody. So
let's band together. Let's everyone go to sleep.
You should probably go on to HowStuffWorks.com and read the hilariously out-of-date Is Science Phasing Out Sleep? Type in phasing and sleep in the search bar at HowStuffWorks.com, and that will take you elsewhere. Also, don't forget The Rise and Fall of Provigil, P-R-O-V-I-G-I-L, by Evelyn Pringle. And also The Stay Awake Men on the New York Times. It was an opinion column written by Thomas Bartlett. Pretty good stuff.
Just his opinion.
Yeah. All right. It's time for what? Listener mail? Do we have listener mail?
Yeah, we do.
Let's do it.
The return of listener mail, Josh. And this is specific to our trivia night because it is about Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Awesome.
This is from Kate and Hunter, who are married. Hey guys, when I heard that the creator of Aqua Teen would be joining your trivia festival in a trivia festival, I felt compelled to write you guys to tell you of how that show changed my life. I was in my junior year of college when I went to a potluck dinner at a friend's apartment. I met a sweet, handsome, and funny guy there, and we chatted most of the evening. At the end of the night, he mentioned Aqua Teen, he did his meatwad voice, and asked if I'd like to go over to his place and watch ATH, because he had season one on DVD.
That's like the etchings of the 21st century. You want to come back to my place, see my etching?
He's a very smooth character.
He is.
We stayed up all night watching the show, laughing and talking. 2 years later, we were spending our date night watching ATH and eating pizza when he proposed to me. When we were planning our wedding, we wanted to put Meatwad and Master Shake on top of the cake as an homage to their role in our meeting with Frylock as the minister. But we couldn't find any little figures of them. We tried several times to get in touch with someone connected to the show, see if they could hook us up or tell us where we could buy them, but we never had any luck. Our wedding was perfect anyway, and we've been married close to 3 years now. Needless to say, we still love Aqua Teen. So, if you guys think to share our story with Dave Willis, tell him thank you for us from Kate and Hunter. And this is our way of sharing it. And yeah, I hope Dave Willis
with everybody.
Is listening to our show.
Yeah. I wonder if he does now. Now that he's like, oh, I didn't know these guys existed. I guess I'll listen to him since I'm playing trivia.
I bet he checked it out and may have listened to a poor episode and never tuned in again.
Probably.
Or maybe he's our number one fan now.
Yeah, I think that's a great story. And I, for one, think that they should manufacture the characters from Aqua Teen Hunger Force. Like, remember
sure
the
have.
Little Smurf figurines?
Yeah.
Perfect size. Handy.
You know, back in the day when South Park first came on, I made a little Sculpey. You know what Sculpey is? Have you ever used Sculpey? It's like Play-Doh and clay, but you can bake it in your oven at home.
Yeah.
Sculpey.
Yeah.
I made little Sculpey South Park guys because they didn't exist at the time. It was so new. And people were like, oh my gosh, where'd you get those? And I said, I made them. And then, you know, they started mass manufacturing South Park and everything after that.
Nice.
So anyway, I would have recommended to Kate and Hunter to get Sculpey and make your Frylock and Master Shake and Meatwad.
They're pretty demanding. They like things to just be kind of given to them.
Well, sounds like it.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Kate. Thanks, Hunter. Mazel tov on your wedding. Sorry it didn't work out exactly according to plan, but we'll see if God can change things for you.
That was the Stuff You Should Know episode entitled, Is Science Phasing Out Sleep? Originally podcast at HowStuffWorks.com on October 12th, 2010. If you would like to contact Josh or Chuck, you can email them at StuffPodcast@HowStuffWorks.com. You can subscribe to Stuff You Should Know and other podcasts at HowStuffWorks.com, as well as on iTunes. This is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, and online at WFMU.org.
Doing that. downtown Soulville show. Mr. Fine Wine here on a Friday night with some big stacks of Soul 45s in front of me. Got some great stuff tonight. A couple thematic ones. Lots of themes to hit on this week, obviously. I did not bring any earthquake records, though. Who even remembers the earthquake at this point, right? 201-200-WFMU, the Soul line. You can email me at finewine@wfmu.org. Soul 45's on a Friday night. Stay tuned.
Bop, bop, bop.